Blog Talk Radio.
My, y'all know how much I love that, and it's one of my favorite Shalamar songs that we did, but you know what, it's time to bring on our guest, so here we go with my brother, Mr. Ricky Free Smith. What's up, Rick?
Hey, what's going on, Wardell? How you doing?
Oh, man, much love to you. God bless you, man, and thank you so much for taking out time. I know you are a busy man, and you got a show about to happen, so we appreciate you coming on and just blessing us here at Solar Records Radio. Long time, man, long time. I have to see you, too. I need to see you, brother.
Well, brother, you know, you see me all the time. You don't have to come to a show to see me.
Yeah, I know. I just got to get in the state where you are, at least get in the state. Yeah, so but I will be in town. I'll be in town in California in July at this point, just depending on gas, because I'm driving, man, and the gas prices are just outrageous. I heard you guys, they're like $6 a gallon over there?
Yeah, it's like I've seen it almost at $7 in some places, which is crazy.
Oh, my. That's just crazy ridiculous. Well, anyway, man, listen, I'm just so blessed to have you on, and I want to get right to this, you know. So why don't you do us a favor, because there's a lot of people that are kind of confused about your history, as you and I were talking earlier, and you were sharing that a lot of people, you know you for being with Morris Day and the Time, but they don't know about your history prior to that. So can you kind of just share with us, you know, your walk in the music industry?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I, well, of course, church was my roots, coming up playing under my mom and playing with along with Billy Preston back when I was 11 years old. And then just hooked up with the Silvers back in 1978 as a keyboard player to play with them, which was really great, I thought. And I think it was about maybe 79 when the Silvers decided to go self-contained, where they all played the instruments themselves, and so they kind of got rid of the band, and so I was still sort of left. And so they asked me if I wanted to play drums. And I said, sure, why not? I'll play the drums. So I played the drums for the Silvers back in 79, and then hooked up with Leon and you, Wardell, and everyone there doing, going back to keyboards. This was back in the early 80s. Well, actually, no, 79, because we cut And the Beat Goes On in 79. So that was my first, involvement with, Solar and Leon and all of you all. And, that was great. And then by 1985, I went on and jumped back on the bass guitar and started playing with Morris and been with him like 37 years.
And wow.
So I've been on all these different instruments in the last 42 years. 42 years. I'm telling my age now, but yeah, that's what I've been doing, and it's been great. It's been fun.
It's crazy that, that you spend so much time with so many different instruments. Was it that you, the reason why you play so many instruments, the question is, why was it that you couldn't figure out which instrument you loved the most, or was it just that you started falling in love with each instrument?
I'm going to share something with you that I've never shared with anyone, and so you all will be the first to hear this. When I was very young, I played drums starting at 8, and so being in church and hearing all the different instruments, well, when I would go home and my mother would put me to bed, before I go to sleep, I would rock my head, literally rock my head, rock myself to sleep, and was singing or playing music inside, my head. I would just sing music, and I would play the drums and the bass and organ parts with my mouth, but just to myself. And so these instruments became just a very much a part of my upbringing and my DNA. And my mother, when I was 3, she would have me on her lap while she was playing the piano. So, all these instruments was just embedded in my spirit from very young. And I just picked them up. Drums is my first instrument. So I let me just say that for the record. I'm a drummer.
How did that happen? How did drums become your first instrument?
Well, I would say back when I was about 7, I'll tell you a story. My sisters went to camp for a week, and I was really sad and really crying. And, my mother decided, well, hey, I'll take you and get your drum set. And she got me a drum set, and I was the happiest kid ever. And I said,
they can go to
camp every year if I'm going to get.
I can't wait till y'all go to camp.
If I'm going to get instruments, that's great. But anyway, yeah. And so, like yourself, and I'm sure when you started out, I didn't have a drum set, so I played pots and pans and Tupperware. And stuff like that, and I would play, with just little sticks, whatever I had, so it was just always that for me.
So your mom knew that you wanted to play drums.
I was over at Kevin Spencer's house. I'm gonna go back a little further. I was over at Kevin Spencer's house at maybe 5 years old, and he had a drum set in his house, and so my mother and his mother went to a service. She dropped me off. And so I went in the room where the drums were, and that's all I wanted to do. And so Kevin, wanted me to come outside and play. And I was like, okay, I would leave for a minute, but I would get right back up in this room on the drums. And it's been love ever since with the drums.
I just have to say this for the listeners, just so this makes sense, because I just want y'all to know that Kevin and Ricky wasn't putting Dynasty together when they were 5, okay? Ricky's mom and Kevin's mom were best friends, right? And so that's what happens, the kids get together because the parents are together, and they develop these relationships, but they happen to have lifelong relationships because they still hang out together. So, man, what an amazing gift for you and Kevin to for your parents to you know, be friends and stuff, and then you guys became friends, and not just friends but business partners as well. So, man, what a nice nice road for you. Wow. So
And I just want to add this.
Go ahead,
I don't mean to cut you off, but
Kevin,
you know, this is before he even played any instrument, you know, and then, so it's just amazing how he evolved into the talent that he has, you know, and he was just always great at taking something and being the best at it. And we learn from each other, really, but it's been quite a journey, and I thank God for all of it, really. Really, I'm really grateful on that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then when did Richard Randolph come into you guys' life? Because you, Kevin, and Richard knew each other before I met any of you guys.
I'm going to say 1975.
Okay.
We were playing in local bands, and Richard happened to be lived down the street from Kevin. And so we played in a local band called True Perfection, and I played organ in the band at that time, and that was just my instrument. I played B3 and that was it. And so, you know, we grew up playing all the Grand Central Station stuff, Release Yourself and Intro, and so I mastered all the organ parts, and you know, and we just, you know, we played all these great songs from the 70s, Sly Stone stuff, and so Richard, you know, played the guitar, and you know, he was funky, man. I mean, oh my God. He was young and he was really funky, man.
Oh man, oh man. I miss Richard so much. Rest in peace, Richard, and thank you.
Bro.
Thank you, Richard, for, you know, being who you were. Richard was a very different kind of guy, you know, out of everybody in the band. He had his own thing. But to be perfectly honest, each and every single one of us are individuals, and we all do come to the table with whatever it is, whoever God made us to be. And so Richard was, to me, one of those kind of people that had like a hard shell, but in the inside he was very tender. And so I chased after Richard's heart because his outside was so hard, you know. It's like, you know, so you would think Richard's like this tough, mean guy, but he's on the inside, he's a very sensitive guy. He was always very tender, but people that are sensitive tend to build a shell around them to protect them from people so that they don't end up, you know, getting hurt. And so I'm just,
absolutely,
you know, I missed that. I missed Richard. I miss him so much. He was such a great friend. And but anyway, and I was thinking about William Shelby, another member of Dynasty that we lost this morning, because the pictures are popping up on Facebook. And I go, oh, there goes Will again. And so, you know, I truly, truly miss those guys. But anyway, I'm grateful, Ricky, that we had the opportunity to know them, and not just know them, but work with them and hang out with them and travel with them and, you know, and be able to be a part of their dreams with them. So that was a blessing for us. I want to get into this whole show is really based around the you and the synthesizers. People have been asking about the synthesizers, like what is it about the synthesizers from the late 70s until the early 80s that made it such a big impact? Why did synthesizers make such a big impact on pop R&B music?
I think it was the characteristics of synthesizers and all the different sounds that you could get out of synthesizers. I have to go back to Herbie Hancock when he did Chameleon. And that was probably one of the first songs, you know, back in the day when you really heard the synthesizer. And so you were able to create all these different sounds with synthesizers and change them and it brought another element to music, you know, along with the acoustic instruments, you know, with the piano and drums and the guitars and bass and stuff. And so the synthesizer just brought another color where you can color the music more. And that's what made it really, really great with the synthesizers and, you know, in different groups, different eras, you know, people use different synthesizers. Like, you know, we use the Arp Quadra, and, you know, the Prodigy, you know, with a lot of the Solar stuff, we did, and that was our sound. And then you had Prince that used the Arp Omni and used the OB-8 and Prophet and stuff like that, that created his sound. So, you know, it has created sounds for a lot of different genres of music, you know, and so it's been great. And I mean, synthesizers are still very relevant today, and they're still using them.
Yes, absolutely. I have a question from overseas. They want to know, can you explain the term polysynth and, you know, bass modules and vibrato and synthesizer stabs, any of those?
Okay, well, the polysynth just allows you to be able to play more than one note at a time. So you can play up to four or five notes. It allows you to play chords, should I say, versus when you have like a mono synthesizer where you can only play one note. So the polysynth was really something that, especially on the Arp Quadra, it had four sections. It had a bass section, it had a polysynth section, it had a string section, and it had a lead section, which you can combine all those sounds together. And the polysynth was just so that you can play more chords.
What about the bass module? I guess they don't know what that is.
The bass module is just a module that had bass sounds, all sort of bass sounds, different programs, different, you know, just totally different sounds. I mean, you can scroll through different programs. But let me back up, though, because before they had programs, you had to program the keyboard. So not only were you a player, but you had to know how to program to get the sound out of the synthesizer. And it's easy now because now you can just go through, you know, one, two, three, four, and you have all these different sounds. But back when we were playing the Mini Moves and the Oberheims and stuff like that, even the Quadra, you know, stuff like that, even though it had presets, but all that had to be programmed in order to create those sounds. They weren't like factory sounds or anything like that. You had to create your own sound. So that's what really made synthesizers really great, because you had to have an ear and had to really know how to program a synthesizer.
Okay. I'm just looking at some of the questions that's coming in. Did the synthesizer only help to make more musicians? Is that redundant in the long term? Does it make them? Yeah.
Well, I mean,
go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No,
well,
sorry,
you know,
you have
the
like
synthesizer was just
delay.
It's just a keyboard, but you know, you still had to play, and you know, not everyone, you know, accepted or how should I say adjusted to the synthesizer, because it required a different kind of touch. But you still had to be a musician, you know, back then. You know, now it's like, you know, you don't have to be a musician or musically inclined. Now you can just, they have stuff now where, you know, it plays it for you.
I know,
cheating,
that's
in
crazy.
My opinion, but, you know,
you know,
that's not fair. You know, we had to work hard back in those days.
I mean, when you say work hard, because I've witnessed you on stage right next to me, and when we were going from one song to another, right before we get to the next song, I watched you turning knobs, pushing levers up, changing things, getting ready for the next song. I mean, that is, you know, it's like, but you have to remember. How do you remember that stuff? How do you, I mean, was it just a God-given gift that you could remember, okay, this next song? Or was it because we rehearsed the stuff so much? Leon drilled us, like, we were like in the studio, I mean, in the rehearsal hall, rehearsed it so much. Is that what helped you to make it, or did you put like tape on your on the synthesizers and to remember how to switch it? Because you were on the job. I mean, you were changing stuff constantly.
Yeah, I think it was because we rehearsed so much, and you know, as we would go over parts over and over and over, well, that became a part of my playing, was programming as I go. And so, you know, when we would stop and rehearse, I'd have to go back and say, okay, we're going to do this section. We're going to the next section. And so in my mind, I had to program my mind to say, okay, we're getting ready to go into this next part. And I'd have to have it ready so that when I get to that next part, it's already there, you know. So I was always sort of kind of ahead of everything, just so that the sound would be right, especially if it started off with a certain sound, like I've just begun, you know, you know, that sound has to be right. There are certain sounds that have to be on point. And so, but that's what made synthesizers fun and great, you know, because you had to program, you had to use your brain, not only for playing, but for making the sound too.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. I just have to take my hat off to you for that, because the fact that you could play the drums, play the keyboards, then go play the bass for the time, I mean, and own it. You owned every instrument that you played. It wasn't like, okay, he's just filling in. You actually owned those positions. And so, man, my hat's off to you, man. I'm so proud of you. And I know your mom had a lot to do with your keyboard playing, right? Did she teach you how to play the keyboards?
Nah, not really. I think, we just
did
always
you
had
play it because
in
of
the
her?
House.
What's that?
Yes, I mean, definitely being around her made me want to play. But having instruments in our home, having a piano, having a Hammond organ in our home was there. And then, you know, I always had my drum set, so I had these instruments. So the summer would be me in the garage playing my drums. And I could walk right in the house and hop on the Hammond organ and play, you know. And so I listened to or watched people like Billy Preston and a lot of great organ players, and I would just watch them and listen, and I would try to go back and try to mimic what I heard. And so it inspired me to want to just play those instruments because of listening to other great musicians. I mean, come on, we all listen to musicians and grew up on musicians. Like, I'm sure you could probably say Billy Cobham and Lenny White and all these great drummers that, you know, you listened to that inspired you to play. And so I think all musicians, I don't care who you are or who you were, we all grew up listening to someone that inspired us to play.
Absolutely. You know, you called it out, Lenny White and all those guys. And you remember, I remember Chick Corea. I just was watching a video of Chick Corea, Return to Forever, which Ricky and I were really into that kind of music. When I first met him, that was something that really drew me to you, Rick, that you were into that progressive jazz, where I left to come and to California and to do Dynasty with you guys. Chick Corea, I was watching Return to Forever, and he was like, they're doing the show. This is the show is performing. I mean, they're performing in the show, right, or playing in the show. And then all of a sudden, when they're about to go to another song, you hear Chick over there, changing the stuff around right there in a live show. But that's the way it used to be. You just had to do what you had to do to get ready, right, for the next song. And he was probably one of the baddest keyboards ever. I mean, there's so many of them, you know. But I'm just saying, he was one of them. And speaking of one of them, I have a question in regards to one of them. Let me see. Had to do with, right here. It says, how influenced was George Duke with the use of ARP synths and mini Moogs in funk music? Did he help to make it more acceptable and exciting?
Yes. George Duke made it more commercial. As bad as he was, you know, George Duke really brought the synthesizers more to the forefront with his style of playing. I mean, he played a lot like when he soloed on the mini Moog, he sounded a lot like Chick Corea, He sounds a lot like Jan Hammer, which a lot of people may not know. But all these players that, you know, play synthesizers, but George Duke just, he made it more commercial, you know. Like even Herbie Hancock, I think when he did Rocket, you know, Rocket was kind of the first commercial song for Herbie Hancock that was more mainstream, but it had heavy, heavy synthesizers and drum machines and stuff like that, you know. But that definitely changed. Those guys were at the forefront of change.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Absolutely. Man, oh, man. Hey, listen, guys, I have to do this real quick because it's really important. This I want to play a little bit of songs or a song that we did that Ricky was really featured on the keyboard, which were, I'm telling you, these songs were huge in the industry and stuff. And so, and Ricky, the blessing is that you know, the company, Leon Silver's God, you know, just your gift gave you the opportunity to be the one to do this with this with this synthesizer that I know that you just got. As a matter of fact, he just got it back again, you guys, and that's the ARP Quadra. Just before I play, just tell us why you love the ARP Quadra so much.
The ARP Quadra was challenging first and foremost because you had to create these sounds, and I just played it how I felt to play it. I let the music sort of guide me, so to speak. You know, I thought of anything. It's just that I was able to take the polysynth and, you know, put the string ensemble on top of it along with the lead. I would combine all three of those together, and it made this particular sound that really just sort of stood out. And like in most music, you know, we always kind of found our place. Or should I say, with the music that we did, everyone found their place. Everybody found their pocket. No one played over each other. And so everybody's part could really be heard.
Yeah.
When you listen to any of our music, you can hear all the guitar, the synth, the drums, the, you know, just all these different elements that created this beautiful bed of music. And I just want to add, it was all of the personalities that made this music. Leon was at the forefront. He was the organizer, arranger, but it took all of the personalities that made the sound of Solar Records. And, you know, it was an amazing journey, man. It's priceless. It's totally priceless.
Oh, wow. I have to tell you guys this too before I play this song. I want you to know that Ricky had the opportunity and he had the pressure of having to play all of the stuff that Benjamin Wright put on our music. And the other guys, and y'all know we just had Benjamin Wright on, right? And so this other, Ricky had to play the strings and the synthesizer parts, because you just heard him saying, I was doing the string parts with the, you know, underneath the poly, whatever you call it, poly synth thing. Rick, and I heard you, like, that there's a part in There It Is on Shalimar's song, one of Shalimar's song, and that thing, it goes, it's called a, what do you call it when it keeps going and it repeats itself?
It's an arpeggiator. It arpeggiates,
yes,
the notes.
Yes. Well, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, so Rick, I got to say this. You did that. Now, I know in the studio we could go back and fix stuff and, okay, one more time. And you told me that you did that a few times, you know, going back, because you had to, like, you got to hit it right at a certain spot to make it fit in the groove. But how did you do that live? Were you just blessed, or did you figure it out?
Live was just, you know, however it hit.
right.
I mean, it wasn't. Right. I didn't have the luxury of you know, doing it, you know, and placing it. And however it did, even if it ended up on the other side of the beat, it was just the arpeggiator,
yes,
that just, it was the vibe of
and
what it did.
Right, the element. You know. Yeah, people go, oh yeah, there it is. Oh, yeah. That's it. And the same for me. When I heard you doing it, you know, it just, I was like, oh, there it is. To me, whenever, you know, there was a very special thing that was happening in that corner where you were. And I'm not saying that because I love you. I'm saying it because it really is how you blessed the music that we were doing. Like, you were playing that stuff on top of all the stuff that we were doing underneath, you know. And you know, as a drummer and a bass player, like, you carry the groove, you drive the train. And when you have somebody on top playing all these amazing parts, it is just amazing. So listen, with that being said, I want to play the music right now. I just want to play this so you can hear how and when you hear this, you'll know that's Ricky right in the beginning of this song, okay? And it's not just this song. Will Smith used this same thing for I'm Going to Miami. So check it out, and we'll be right back. Just give us a second here and check Mr. Ricky Freeze out. We'll be right back. Freeze. Woo.
Yes.
Do you remember where that song, where you wrote that song at? Do you remember?
I was up at the Silver's house.
Yeah. Do you remember what part of the house?
Make that move.
Do you remember
what
part
bedroom.
Of the house?
That's all.
Yeah.
I think we were in somebody's bedroom.
I think we were in Ricky's bedroom, but I'm not sure because for some reason I think it was one of the girls' bedrooms too, but I'm not sure. But anyway, yes, I was there with the sticks, playing the sticks on the bed.
It's really amazing. Yeah, it's really amazing listening to this stuff in hindsight. And what a blessing, man. I just have to say this, you know. I don't own it at all. You know, it's really God that allowed me to do what I do. And I'm just an instrument. I'm just a vessel. And it just happened to work. You know what I mean? We did the music early on. You know, we didn't know if it was going to be a hit or not, but we just loved being around each other. And that was what it was for us. And it just so happened that you, the fans, embraced our music. So, you know, we're very thankful. And I just want to thank each and every one of you all for embracing our music. Because if it wasn't for you all, we wouldn't be where we are. So thank you, really. Thank you.
Yes. That's well said, and so, man, you know, I just got to say thank you so much for, you know, just all the fun times that we had. Ricky and I were roommates when he was with Dynasty. You know, y'all know he hops from group to group, right? one minute he's with the Steelers, then he's with Dynasty, then he's with Morris Day. Hey, just come on. I mean, you know, the best thing about you is that you have these good things. You were Dynasty when we were on the road and traveling around. You were with the Silvers when they were hot. You were, you know, now you're Morris Day, and that's just that thing will never stop. That's because where you are with him is just that's where the people love him, right where he is, and you know, with the time they love them right where they are. So that can go on forever until y'all decide to stop. But I just want to say thank you, man. Thank you for, you know, for giving yourself to music the way that you have done. I mean, you're almost a slave to the music, but the best part about it is that it's because God has put passion in you for the music, and you share it with the world, and we're so grateful for you doing that, and we thank you so much. Also, I have to say this, Ricky Freeze also produced Dynasty's last two singles that was on ABC Records, and he wrote and produced them. And so, you know, we needed a producer because at the time that we decided to get back together, it was the five of us, including Richard Randolph, but Nydra and Linda, Kevin, and Ricky and myself and Richard Randolph. But then, you know, everyone knows what happened with Richard, but, you know, we had to find the songs and stuff. And so Ricky stepped up to the plate and became the producer for us, as Leon could not do it, did not want to do it because of, you know, he preferred to be in the studio and do what he was doing, but he encouraged us to go ahead on and do it, and we did. And we were blessed because of it. So thank you, Ricky, for, you know, giving us that number two hit. We do appreciate that very much.
No, definitely. And I just want to say this. I want to thank you, Wardell, for Solar Records Radio, for keeping the legacy alive. I really commend you. I take my hat off to you. God bless you for doing what you're doing. You're keeping the music real, and you're keeping our legacy alive. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate you just as a brother, as a friend, as a roommate who was always clean. We always kept our rooms clean.
But we kept our rooms clean.
But really, in all seriousness, you know, bless you for what you're doing. And, you know, it's really beautiful, man. And I'm just glad that you and I are still here. We're alive today. And we thank God and for all of us that are still here. It's a lot going on in the world, but we're still here. And God is still reigning and still showing he's on the throne.
Amen.
So let's not lose the faith. Let's keep our heads up. And we're going to make it. Thank you.
Amen. All right. And in closing, Ricky, is there anything else that you would like to say? I do have one more question. First of all, I got to say this to you. Hello from the UK to Ricky Freeze, from Greg, and Astrid, and, you know, the Solar Records Radio team. Astrid's in Amsterdam waiting for you guys to come there. And Greg is giving a shout out. He's about to go see Shalimar next Wednesday. And so, but, you know, they're just giving you love and shout outs.
Well, give them love. Give them love back for me. Give them love back for sure.
Awesome. Awesome. And then also, the question is that do you know, like, is the music industry suffering in any way musically, in regards to, you know, the musical part? Is there, do you, I mean, in other words, what do you think about the music nowadays?
I mean, it's the music for today. I don't want to use the word that it's suffering. I think we're just living in a different time now, where there aren't the musicians like it used to be when we were coming up. You know, now everything is sort of, you know, already made for you. You know, you can buy computers, you can buy synthesizers, these programs that create the music for you. But it's not like musicians. Yeah, no, and I mean, and they are really good. I just think what's missing are real musicians playing instruments. That's what's missing, because that's what we all were before we became who we were and are. You know, we were musicians first.
Yeah.
From Jimi Hendrix on down, I mean, Miles Davis, I mean, you know, Prince, I mean, we were all musicians that loved our instrument, and then the music came later. The songs came later, but we were music inclined first, and that's, I think that's the only thing that's different today, you know, and so that's what's missing, you know, but I mean, it's still music. It will never be the same, I don't think. I mean, I do want to just take my hat off to Bruno Mars for keeping real music alive and playing old style music, which is bringing it to the forefront, which is making the kids think it's new, but really to us, it's stuff that we've heard years ago. So I really take my hat off to Bruno Mars for that.
Amen. Amen. And can you just share a little bit about your relationship with Billy Preston?
Oh, I mean, I met Billy Preston probably when I was at the age of 8. And my mother and his mother were a part of a gospel group called the Ladies of Songs. Mm-hmm. So they would rehearse over at his house. And so I would always go with my mom to rehearsals, and I would see him. He would come out, and he'd play the organ with them. And so I was just young, just watching them and looking at him playing. And, you know, he was just always very kind and nice to me. And, you know, so I would always end up over at his house like once a week. And then we started doing concerts in church, you know, and he would be on the organ and my mom on the piano, and I would be on my little 4-piece drum set. And I was just playing along with them, you know, and at the time, I knew that he was someone, but I really didn't focus on that, who he played with the Beatles. And, you know, he was like an uncle to me. So he was like, it's just Billy Preston, and I love the way that he played, but I didn't really recognize until I got older all the things that he had done. You know, and God rest his soul. I mean, he was great talent, and they do have a documentary coming out on him soon, sometime next year, so that will really be great. But I will always love him. I did have an opportunity of recording a song with him that we wrote together that maybe one day I could share with the world. But it's a beautiful song called "Every Day the Sun Shines," and it's a beautiful song. So, yeah, Billy is great, and he was one of my idols actually coming up.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, man, for sharing, and God bless you. And where are you at today?
We're in Indianapolis, actually. I believe the 500 is going to happen on Sunday. So we're doing a pre-concert tonight here in Indianapolis. So it should be great. I guess this is the first race in the last 2 or 3 years. So it's really crowded here, and everybody's excited to be there. So it's going to be great, man. It's great.
Awesome. So good weather, no rain, good weather?
It's overcast. It's definitely overcast. But you know, that doesn't matter to the people out here. They will stand in some rain to watch some cars go around the track.
How's the temperature? Is it warm?
The temperature's warm.
Okay.
Actually, it's warm. Yeah, it is warm. It's not cold. It's warm. So it's really nice weather, and it should be really, really nice. It's going to be really, really nice, I'm sure.
Anybody else on the show with you guys?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not sure who's going to be. You know, I just kind of show up. But can I add this if you don't mind? I just want to say to all the listeners, I do have a barbecue sauce out that I'm making.
Oh, yeah.
And it's called Uncle Ricky's Barbecue Sauce. And so you can purchase it through UncleRicky'sFood@gmail. And then I have my own clothing line called TheFreezeClassicCollection.com. You can check me out there. And I'm just trying to do all that I can. And then I do have my own bass guitar coming out next year, 2023, called The Freezicle. And so be on the lookout for that. It's a beautiful bass.
Cool.
And and so I just, I'm grateful, and I thank God for the opportunity to allow me to be able to have these things, you know. So it's great. Thank you again for allowing me to put that little spot in.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I'll post it in the show as well. So for my friends that did not have a pen and you know, ready to write this down, I'll post it in the show for everyone. So don't stress out, guys. I'll put it there. So just come back and it'll be right there for you. And I have to tell you, I ordered the sauce and it is good. It is good. I'm cheating. I cheat with it because I put it on my barbecue, and then guess what else I do? I start putting it on all of my food. I spread it all around. I dip my other food in it because it's so good. Because there's something about the end of the taste that just really pulls me in, and so I said, whoa. What is that? That is really good. You know, it's not just the initial taste, but it's the end of it that gets you again. It's like, whoa. And so I'm just telling you, you got to check it out. Ricky Freeze, man, that's awesome. I love it. Uncle Ricky's barbecue sauce, y'all got to check it out. And we appreciate you, man. Thank you so much for blessing us, Rick.
Thank you for having me, Wardlow. I really appreciate it. I love you and all the listeners. Thank you so much, man.
All right, man. You take care. God bless. Have a great show, and we'll see you soon. Good. God bless you, Ricky.
Okay.
All right.
Thank
peace
you.
Out.
Okay.
Yeah.